Welcome to episode number 345 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the Gibson Christmas. That's right. We're going to cover what exactly does the Homestead to Gibson do during Christmas. Give you guys a little bit of idea. These weirdos that talk about all the stuff that we talk about, what does it look like inside our house during Christmas time? We're going to do a little bit of that. Also give you guys a little bit of an update as to what's been going on, why the latency in shows the last couple of weeks. We'll tell you there's a good reason for it. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is December the 17th, 2014. It is beginning of the week Monday. That's right. We are at the beginning of the week, long and laborious as it has been the last couple of days. We're going to go over a wonderful topic today that I think you guys are going to love. We're going to cover the Gibson Christmas. You hear about these guys, my wife and I, Corey and I, that do all this weird stuff, talk about all this weird stuff in parenting. What does a Gibson Christmas look like? We're going to tell you guys a little bit about that. Also, I wanted to talk with you guys a little bit about why have we had such an absence of shows. There is a good reason for that, and we've been going through a lot of stuff the last few days, and we're going to update you guys on that, what's been going on with foster and adoption stuff. We're going to catch you guys up on that. Before we do that, let's get into some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to get notified of all the new episodes, come out here at the Family Podcast Network. Jump over to thefamilypodcast.com on that right-hand side, enter your name and your email address. What that does is that just makes sure that you never miss out on any episode that we come out with here. You don't get solicited. You don't get a whole bunch. Every time we put out a new show, it just gives you an email saying, hey, there's a new show that's up. This is when it went out, and here's what we talked about. Make sure you never miss out on that one show. If you just would have heard it, it could have changed everything. Also, guys, don't forget to support the show. Like, let's say you've been thinking about a way that you want to support the show, and just say thank you for the stuff that we do here, the shows that we try to kick out as much as we can for you guys. Consider becoming a PTACer. You can go to thefamilypodcastnetwork.com, click on the Become a Member or the PTAC area, and whenever you do that, it'll allow you to sign up. Whenever you do that, you can do it as simple as $5 a month. That's right. If you feel like you've got $5 every single 30 days, that you're like, you know what, we get enough out of this show that we're willing to give that, consider becoming a PTACer. You only have to do it one time, and then it'll automatically deduct from that point on. At any time that you want, you can cancel it if finances are tough or you just get tired of the show. So anyway, but consider becoming a PTACer. Last, if you guys have any questions, comments, what do you guys want to talk about? We love that kind of stuff. Consider sending it to us here. You can always email us at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork. You can also go to the Contact Us page. It'll be on the main site. Quick aside on that, how you guys liking the new site? I think it looks pretty good. We got a few new logos done. The Real Family Guys podcast has been without a logo this entire time. We just kind of shared everything with the Family Podcast Network. So we finally now got our Real Family Guys podcast up. I think it looks great. The new site is specifically designed to help you guys listen to the show easier. So whenever you log in and you download thefamilypodcastnetwork.com, now, whenever you do it on your phone, your iPad, or your computer, it'll look a little bit different and easier for it to download. Anyway, we're just making that a little bit easier for you guys who do listen on that. Hey, don't forget, share the show out, especially now that it looks cool. Share this sucker out. We want to get this out to as many people as we can. All right, guys, let's get out of this housekeeping because we're moving into 4 minutes on that, and I don't want to go much longer. And let's get into our topic for today, which is the Gibson Christmas. What does the Homestead Day Gibson Christmas look like? Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about what goes on here at the Family Podcast Network. Now, I want to be real upfront with you guys. I've never made it a secret here at the Family Podcast Network what our spiritual beliefs are. I want to make sure that we preface this. If this is your first time listening, you haven't heard this disclaimer, even though we give it a lot. Or if you've been listening for a while, we're going to get into some things today. I want to be very upfront. We are a family that believes in spirituality. We are believers in the God of the Christian Bible. And so a lot of the stuff that we pull from is pulled out of some of the belief systems about spirituality and Christians. For those of you guys that are wringing your hands in excitement, like, oh, so you think Santa Claus is about, you know, Christianity? We're going to talk a little bit about that in our belief systems and how we're kind of weirdos. And no, we do not think that. We actually do not practice Santa Claus. Oh, we'll talk a little bit about that here in just a minute and why that we don't do Santa Claus. We also teach our kids not to ruin it for everybody else, but we'll get into that here in just a minute. Real quick, I wanted to give you guys an update, and admittedly, I'm gonna make some excuses as to why we haven't been running a show just a little over a week now. I think we've missed three shows total in the last 2 weeks, maybe four. But there is a reason for that, and I want y'all to know why. And I want y'all to know Family Podcast Network is not going anywhere. We love the show. We're going to keep doing this. I feel a deep level of conviction to keep the show up. In other words, I just feel like it's the right thing to do, even if we never get a full supporting set of PTACers. It just feels like the right thing to do, and I got to stick with those convictions. With that said, we've had, I don't know. Trying to think of a word that won't offend people, but it conveys appropriately the amount of stuff we've been through. We've had a hell of a last 2 weeks. For those of you guys who maybe are listening for the first time, we are in the process of fostering to adopt a little girl. She's 4 years old. She has been aforementioned referenced on the show as our sweet tea. Her name starts with a T, and so for some anonymity, we changed some of the names with her for now because there's some volatile situation with the mom that she was pulled from. Mom has connections with some gang violence, and we're connected in a slight way to the family. So we have to be very anonymous when we do this. So we changed the names of our two kiddos that we're fostering to adopt, and one of them's name is Sweet Tea, and so anyway, Sweet Tea, there is a disorder called reactive attachment disorder. Now, I'm not going to be able to encapsulate it all for you guys today, and especially not in this pseudo intro segment before we get into the main topic. However, in this reactive attachment disorder, so here's what happens with normal folks, right? Whenever we're born, we attach to parents, right? So what we begin to learn is that when I cry, when I'm wet, whenever I'm hungry, when I'm tired, when I'm sleepy, when I'm cold, that when I cry, somebody will get up and come to me and help me fix the things that I am too little to do. And what happens is that we begin to attach to people, and we begin to become close to them, and we feel safe around them. And that is a normal piece to normal human development. The brain acts very robustly when we connect with people. When babies connect with adults, their brains flourish. They do well. They grow. They expand themselves. The neurology is fascinating on how quickly they form synaptic and dendritic connections when this attachment is going on. And it's healthy. It's wonderful. Everybody feels good, and it's warms and fuzzies, and it's a wonderful thing. However, not all families and not all kids grow up attaching to someone. What'll happen is that when kids constantly go without their needs being met, they begin to develop a belief system that this mentality that whenever I need things, somebody is not going to come take care of it. And so they begin to become very self-reliant, and they begin to take care of themselves in a very unique way, but they stop desiring to connect with people. Interestingly enough, the brain has the opposite reaction. Dendritic connections and synaptic connections are lowered. They don't form quite as well. They don't retain knowledge and learn as quickly. They're not mentally retarded, but the brain is stunted in its own way. As this continues to go on, typically this is, you know, kids get pulled from mom and dad or mom or dad, one or the other, and get placed, you know, into like a foster care or, you know, a residential treatment center or something like that. And then maybe the foster parents just can't quite handle them, and then they get pulled from that foster parent and they get stuck with another set, or maybe grandparents, and then grandparents are too old for them, or you know, this young family who's a foster family just didn't know what to do with them, and they get out of it or they move somewhere else. And so then what happens is this kid begins to learn that everybody that I get close to, that I could get close to, leaves me. Well, once a person becomes convinced in that, and you know, we've almost always known somebody like this in our own ways, whether it was somebody we dated in high school or something like that. Those people that every time they get close to somebody, they bounce and they react and they flit away and they don't want to be close to you anymore. We all kind of know folks like that. Well, eventually what'll happen is they develop a mindset: if I get close to a person, they're going to hurt me. So Everybody gets drawn, whether we like it or not, whether we're reactive attachment or not, we all are drawn to connections with people. Well, you know, by our belief systems, we were designed to connect with people. So what'll happen is that we often resist. We resist those things. So when somebody begins to become close to us, they become threatening. Well, why would somebody who wants to love on you and connect with you be threatening? Well, the last time that I tried to get close to somebody, they left me. They abandoned me. They took off. They beat me. They slapped me. They hit me. They kicked me. Whatever. And so there reaches a point that people, humans, will begin to accelerate how quickly someone will reject them by being rotten, mean, gross, rude, hurtful, violent. Because their mindset is, if I let this person get close, they're going to hurt me. So I might as well just speed up the inevitable. I know they're going to leave me anyway. I might as well just make it happen faster. Our little Miss Sweet Tea has been diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder. And we've seen behaviors that have been difficult, a struggle, have been painful, literally, and hurtful. My wife has walked away with two black eyes. She's been peed on, vomited on, pooped on. Lots of things that have been very difficult. So we've been dealing with some of those things. Now, I want y'all to hear me say, things have gotten better. Much, much better. Since when she first got here. But this last couple of weeks have been tough. Why have they been tough? You see, in any time that you work with people that come with tumultuous or painful backgrounds, they come with their own baggage. And baggage can often be very specifically linked to certain times. I remember when I was a young man, it almost always seemed that when I would date people and we would break up, we almost always broke up during like cold wintry times, like right there at December and January. It almost seems that was always when it happens. And I remember one year when I was dating this very pretty girl, and we got to January and nothing happened. But I remember thinking I was nervous and worried the whole time about our relationship, because in my mind, this is when bad stuff happens. Well, guess what? What time of the year are we rolling around? Not everybody gets to sing, "It's the most wonderful time of the year," right? Not everybody has that experience. Because some people, maybe they didn't get pulled away from mom and dad or foster parents or whatever else at Christmas time. But maybe they got pulled away before Christmas time and they had that first Christmas that they didn't get to spend with mom and dad. Or that first Christmas they didn't get to spend with that one family that they loved being with. And so we call that in our household traumaversaries, the anniversaries of something traumatic that happened in their lives. And I think we've been on a traumaversary the last 2 weeks, because I realized as my wife, Corey, and I were sitting down talking about it, that all of this stuff started right whenever we put up the Christmas tree. And I think that just kind of unearthed a whole slew of crap, that it was just a deluge of some emotional junk that just slammed her. And just really scratched the surface, scratched the head off of an old wound. And so we've been dealing with some pretty rough things. You know, I say we. For the most part, my part has been the phone calls from my wife saying, "Trey, what do I do?" "Trey, I don't have a clue what this is about. What do you think about this?" And my wife, bless her heart, has taken such a heavy hit. And I don't want to ruminate on this too much. I do want to laud my wife. No, she typically does not go back and listen to these shows, so I'm not going to earn any winner's points out of this. But I do want to spend some time building up my wife in this. And just, you know, my wife also came from a very hard background. Corey and I have talked, and I'm free to share this with you guys, but she would probably be diagnosed reactive attachment as well. And she was hurt and damaged by so many people, particularly men, that she has a hard time connecting with people, because connection with people has a tendency to mean rejection later. And so she also has grown up like that. And, you know, as I began to figure that out, I started studying reactive attachment long before we even started discussing foster adoption. We're talking like 10 plus years ago. Well, maybe eight plus years ago. I started studying reactive attachment because I had a family that I worked with in therapy that was diagnosed then. I had no clue what that was. I never even heard of it. And we sat down with it, and I walked out of that, and I was just mesmerized by what it was. And I started thinking about my wife, and I started talking with Corey about it, and she's like, "You know, I think you're right. I think that's what it is." And so, you know, it's interesting to see how – now, I'm moving into some spiritual beliefs here, and feel free to ignore this part if you just disagree with this being a truth or a truism. But, you know, for us, we really believe that God was using the trauma and the junk that was in my wife's life long before, because how coincidental that we would get a kid who's diagnosed that when my wife fully understands it. Now, because of that, my wife's pretty hard. She's a pretty tough lady. And that's kind of what we've had to be with a lot of this stuff, because some of these behaviors, I mean, you got to be pretty tough to not break down. You really have to be tough not to break down. And my wife has strided with it. That doesn't mean that there aren't days that I'm on the way home and I'm on the phone and Corey's telling me about everything that happens. Like, when I get there, I want you to put some nice clothes on. I want you to grab your purse and I want you to go watch a movie and go eat out somewhere and I'll take care of kids tonight. That doesn't mean that we haven't exponentially jumped in how many times we have that conversation. Yeah, you just need to get out of the house. You've had a hell of a day. You get out of this house and you go do what you need to do. Those have gotten a lot higher than normal. Or at least previous. But I want to take a minute to brag on her for that. But it's been hard. It's really been hard. You know, the interesting thing about reactive attachment is that it doesn't like unity, because unity means attachment. And attachment is threatening, because threatening means I'm going to get hurt. And so kiddos that are diagnosed reactive attachment often do very strange and socially inappropriate behaviors. And like one of the things that they do is that they attach, they don't attach, but they will be absolutely rotten and horrible to one parent, but they will be as cool as a cucumber to the other one, typically the male, the father, the dad. And so what will happen is like in our household, I'll get these calls about how, oh my God, this happened, this was horrible, this was a mess, and then we did this, and we kicked and screamed, and we threw this fit, and we threw ourselves down, and we threw the safety gate across the room and knocked the lamp over, and then I get home and we're just as fine as can be. So I had to go back. I had to pull all my old notes out of this stuff, and I had to go reread through some of this. And I was rereading through this thinking, often what these kiddos do, and I believe it's subconscious. I don't think it's, I'm going to do this to create turmoil in the house. I think it's subconscious because they're afraid. They actually will cause division between parents, because what they'll do is they'll be perfect. They're just little angels, right, with one of them. But the other one gets to see all the nasty and rotten. And so a lot of times one of them will get frustrated with the other parent, because they're like, I don't understand why it's so big deal. Why can't you just square this away? She doesn't do this with me, right? And I was beginning to realize that I was doing that. And I went back and reread through all this material that I had collected years ago, and I went, oh, crap. It's been happening. It's been happening to me, and I've been leaving my wife hung out to dry. So I had to apologize to her, and we had to really rethink our strategy and how we do this. But already we're beginning to see, but let me rephrase this. This is my wife speaking here. We are beginning to see better results, not just with me when I'm in the room, but with her. We're beginning to see those good results. My wife is learning some amazing little hacks and how to pull us. I call it pulling out of the stall, but how to pull us out of our what we just called our meltdown episodes, where we just melt down. She's beginning to figure out how to work with her on pulling out of those meltdowns, and she's been quite successful with it. So all of that to say, we've had a lot of that. That has been combined with, we have had sinus infections, ear infections, bronchitis, and a whole myriad of other mess in this freaking house the last few days with sick people. We've got a kiddo that has a tooth that got dinked and died. Cora, our four-year-old, she fell off of her bunk bed and hit the bed frame on the way down, busted her tooth, stayed in, but it killed the tooth. So we're having to have that pulled tomorrow. So we've had doctor's appointments. All of that to say, it has been ridiculously busy. And we've either not been feeling well, or if we've been feeling well, we've just had so much going on. Things are looking like they're actually going to settle out now. I'm going to be home. I've only got to work two more days this week, short days, and then we're off for almost 2.5 weeks for Christmas. That's the beautiful thing about working for a university. And so things are going to pick back up. You're going to see the shows kind of pump back up. We're probably going to have some break during Christmas time. I might mix down a few old shows for those, just so that way for you guys that are driving, or maybe you're needing, while all the family's sleeping in the back and you're on your way to some family's house, you want to pull an episode up. You'll have something. We'll pull something out that'll be enjoyable. One of the old Vault FPN remixes that are really good. So anyway, that's where we are right now. That's what's been happening the last few days. I want y'all to hear me say this, because we're committed to the Family Podcast Network. And for anything to pull us away temporarily from that commitment, it has to be a really big deal, and it has been. I really think that we're on the up and up. I do not think that with Sweet Tea, we are out of the woods. I think that we're not even at a full year with her living with us. So I suspect there's going to be plenty more anniversaries that are going to come up in terms of her trauma, and we're going to go through these things again. But what we're seeing is that for every little spike and then dip and then spike and then dip, if you put a ruler to it from where it started to where we are now, it's always progression, and we're always getting better. And I believe it's just going to continue to do that. We'll keep you guys updated. All right, with that kind of long intro segment, let's get into the main topic for today, which is the Gibson Christmas. What does the Homestead Day Gibson Christmas look like? We are not traditionalists whenever it comes to this. That does not mean that we put up Hanukkahs or that we don't do any decorations whatsoever, but we are kind of weirdos in how we did it. Now, we're not some amazing reform in holiday design, but we definitely are very selective and very picky. Just today, we were visiting with some of friends of ours, and they were telling us, "Yeah, we're going to do some Christmas here. We're pretty conservative, and what we buy our kids." And we said, "Yeah, we are too." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, really? What do y'all do?" Well, we typically buy our kids one present. What? They looked at us like we were crazy, and I'll explain that a little more in depth in terms of what we do. So let's talk about like what do we do to prepare. So are we like total weirdos when it comes to Christmas, and like we don't put any holiday stuff up? Now, you're going to be wondering why I say, you know, we are weirdos. We mentioned a little bit in the intro segment, we actually don't do Santa Claus. I will explain that here in a little bit. But typically a few weeks out, we did it before Thanksgiving. We knocked up the Christmas tree, and we put out a few Christmas lights. We love that kind of stuff. It's very nostalgic. This is one of the first houses that we've actually had where we've done this before. And it's not because we haven't believed in it before, but we've just never had a house that was really big enough to decorate. We didn't. The last house we were at had just enough room. We have a couch big enough to land like small aircraft on, and it's a sectional, luckily. And so after we got that in there with the armoire and the TV and all that other stuff, I mean, we were out of room. We didn't even have room for a Christmas tree. Last year we had a fiber optic Christmas tree that sat on our table in our very small kitchen. So this is one of the first years that we had the opportunity to dress the tree out, look real pretty, and we did. So let's talk Christmas music then. Do we do traditional Christmas music? Why? My wife and I, Corey and I, we actually don't like traditional Christmas music. Mostly just because, it's not because they're not good songs, we don't like the songs in and of themselves implicitly, but it's mostly because we don't like just how much they're used over and over and over and over. We are lovers of what's called the Reliant K Christmas Holiday. We are both Pandora listeners, and one of the things that we discovered on Pandora was that there is a Reliant K holiday channel that you can put it on. And we love upbeat, heavy rock, in most cases like punk rock and that kind of indies type stuff. Christmas music is what we love and enjoy. This year we discovered a band called like August Burns Red. They have a Christmas album that just makes my face melt. It's amazing. I can listen to all their songs over and over and over and over and over, and I am a happy, happy, happy man. And we also love a lot of the newer Christmas songs that are real beautiful, but that aren't necessarily traditional. I will say this. This is my all-time old-fashioned song for Christmas right here.
Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold.
Ding dong, ding dong. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song. With joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pound, raising the sound. Oh, in the dell, telling a tale, gaily they ring, while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here, ding, merry, 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 merry Christmas. Ding, merry, merry, merry Christmas.
That's one of my personal favorite Christmas old-fashioned. Now, that's actually done by a very, very new rendition made by Barlow Girl. We love her work here at the Casa de Gibson. But anyway, that's one of our favorite songs. So you'll hear that blazing, and typically a lot of that harder rock-style stuff. Don't get me wrong, they're traditional tunes. We just like them harder. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff that we do. So one of the biggest questions that most people want to get into is our belief systems on Santa Claus. We do not do Santa Claus. Now, I grew up as a Santa Claus guy. I always have been. And my mom did it very big for my mom, a little bit with my dad. I mean, it wasn't nearly as big of a hoopla with him, but it was with my mom. And I grew up with very positive perspectives on Santa Claus. And so I want to be very clear with that. I mean, I didn't come from like, you know, Captain Politi, you know, just societally weirdoisms. And we grew up doing that. I mean, my parents did everything from the traditional, you know, once I started kind of catching on whether he was real or not, they would like jingle bells and eat the cookies and all that stuff and use that as kind of the convincing stuff that's very common in our society today. And when my wife and I got married, you know, weirdly enough, even despite where I came from, it was actually me that started feeling like that's not what I wanted to do with our kids. And at what was happening was at the time I was very big on talking with my daughter Anna about lying. Well, so you got to understand, as I was talking to her, I was defining a lie as any statement that a person makes with a deliberate, it has to be deliberate, a deliberate intent to deceive. So it's like an intentional untruth is what we were talking about. And I began to sit down and think about how we use this as an opportunity during, all in good fun, we use Santa Claus as a way to lie to our children. Now, some of you guys out there are, you know, probably do Santa Claus, and I want you to hear me say, am I accusing you of lying to your kids? I'm not going to play that game. I don't care. What matters is your motivation behind it. For us, in our heart of hearts, we felt like if we were sitting down saying something to our kids that was a false statement with a deliberate intent to deceive, then that was lying to our kids, even if our intent was with good motives. To say that there's a jolly fat man that comes down our fireplace and drops off toys under your tree is often and typically done for good intents and purposes. For us, it did not feel like the right thing to do. Now, going back to the question, am I saying that you were lying to your kids? The answer is yes. But I wanted to preface that at the start. I understand that most times the motivation is done under good premise. So I finally talked with my wife about doing that. Luckily, she was very on board. She had no problems with it. And we made a decision that we were not going to teach our kids about Santa Claus. Now, what we did do is we did take the time to teach them. Other people do believe. Other kids do believe. Other kids are told to believe that this is true, where it's not our job as the Gibson family to go burst in bubbles or to create any belief systems that. We just told our kids that if they said Santa Claus is real, we just taught them to say, okay. Just leave it at that. There's no need to go through popping bubbles and all that other mess. So that was one of the things that we did. We made sure they didn't go run around, you know, exploding bubbles for everybody else. And we explained to them why it is. And we explained to them why we didn't teach them that way. And, you know, really, the other problem that I have with Santa Claus, and this is kind of more of my personal one, but we spend all of this time getting to know our kids and learning what they love and the things that they want to do and the things that they want to have. And we take that time and we put it down into a list, and we take that hard-earned money that we as parents earn to go out and we take some of that and we give it to kids and we say somebody else did it. I want my kid to know a few things. Number one, I'm listening when you say you want things. Now, we don't just give our kids gifts in most cases. This is one of the few times a year that we will actually just give them something. Birthdays and typically Christmas are the few times that we will give, with the exception of small things in between. But almost everything else that they get, they have to earn. It doesn't matter if it's the new game that Grant wants for his Xbox 360 or whether it's ice cream that my kids earn. They have to do something to earn it. So if my kids are acting a butt that day, we are not going to go buy them ice cream. So Christmas is one of those few times a year that we allow that. That it's just because you guys are our kids, we want y'all to have these things. And so I don't want some dude who's not even real, who doesn't sit down and listen to what my kids want, to the things that they want to get their hands on, the things that they envy that maybe they can't necessarily get to, who sit there and write these things down, who pay attention for them, who doesn't sit down and work hours upon hours putting together these man hours that will allow them to have this money so that we can get our kids these things, getting credit for my work. I want my kids to know that I love them so much I pay attention to these things and I work hard to provide or to buy these things for my kid. Not provide, that's a different level, but to give my kid these gifts that I want to give them. I don't want some fat guy. Well, okay, that part is actually true for us. I don't want some fat guy in a red suit getting credit for that. I work hard to love on my kids and I want them to know that. So we made a decision to not do Santa Claus, much to the chagrin of much of my family. But it felt like the right thing to do. I've never once regretted not doing that again. We teach our kids not to be turds about it and go, you know, gab flab into, you know, other kids and stuff like that. And it can be done. And it works just fine. However, we do not endorse Santa Claus here. Because by our perspectives and our definition of what a lie is, Santa Claus is a lie. No, we don't do Easter Bunny. really, we don't do traditional Easter in and of itself, even as Christians, as practicing Christians. We don't do the traditional, you know, Easter either, where we say, you know, this is when, you know, Christ was, you know, died and then resurrected and came back from the dead. We don't even take that approach with it, because chronologically, if you look at it, that's probably not when that occurred anyway. So we talk to our kids about that. And guys, I'm not even saying that we don't do, like, Easter egg hunts. What we really do in most cases is most of the fun, cute traditions we stick to. But anything that has some kind of mix in of what we define as our definition, I'm not saying it should be yours, what we define as a quote-unquote lie are the things that we draw our, you know, our lines on. So we don't teach our kids these mediums of stuff. I mean, the reality is that a large part of these belief systems are very pagan in mindset. We don't care about pagan traditions. We really don't. We just look to find, to really get back to the root of what these things are and what the purpose of them is in doing. And it's about thinking about other people, not just thinking about inwardly towards ourselves. So we're really big on doing that. The other piece to it comes in the consumeristic mindset of it. There's no doubt that retailers are going to take most of these major holidays and sell. They're going to sell, they're going to package crap, and they're going to sell it to you because they know that you're going to open up your pockets more during this time. We're not against that. We are, by the very intents of the term, capitalists in this household. We love it when companies go out and sell things and make profits and do good. We do not hate companies. We don't hate major corporations. As long as you are sticking to the things that you want to do and you're doing it ethically, really, I don't even care if you're doing it unethically. Just make sure that people have the choice to choose you or not. We like big companies, and we think they are great. So we don't have a problem with that. We, however, do not want to mix the commercialism with the holiday and what they were intended. So we're very strategic in targeting how we do what we do during that. We typically try to stick to one gift per kid per year. We want it to be something that they typically probably wouldn't buy or couldn't buy because the finances are just too much for themselves. And we've got something picked out. I'm going to share it here because my kids don't listen to the show. For instance, this year, all of the kids have been complaining that they want bikes or a new bike. My daughter Anna's bike is just worn out. I mean, she has just worn the snot out of that thing. My son's bike is just too small for him, and he's ready for something else. So everybody's getting new bikes this year and helmets and that kind of stuff. We will wind up coming home with lots of little stuff. By the way, that's actually coming from my parents. They're incredibly gracious this year to buy that for them. And so that's one of their big ticket items that's coming from family. We're typically sticking with things that are very personality specific to them. For instance, just as an example, my daughter Anna has just fallen in love with drawing. I mean, she, you know, if all the kids are watching a show, a movie or something like that they like, she'll get up and go randomly and sit down and start drawing. She just loves to draw and to write, and she just, I love that about her. So we're going to buy her like a writing kit that's very specific for her and her personality. And we're doing that for each and every one of our kids just to give them something that's very specific. We're going to keep it very small this year. Let me tell you why. So big piece of that is the consumerism part that we talked about. The other thing that we notice that happens is that when we bought the kids a whole bunch of toys, toys come with accessories. And so if you buy Barbie's Whoopi Whoopi Doo, you know, horse Barbie rider or something like that, well, it comes with a Barbie and it comes with a horse, but then it comes with a saddle, and then it comes with these little accessories to quote unquote clean it and blow dry it and fix its mane and a brush and a saddle blanket and all this other crap that comes with it. Well, that's part of toys, right, Trey? Yes, it is. Here's what happens. We get this influx of toys that comes into our household. The next thing you know, there's just toys everywhere, little pieces and parts, and they'll get dumped out all over the floor, and then we come in and say, okay, kids, it's time to clean up, and it turns into this fiasco. Now, being straight, my kids are overwhelmed with the amount of crap that gets dumped out all over their floors. So eventually what happens is we do this for maybe a month, and we're frustrated out the gills, just can't, you know, stand the fits that we throw every time that we've got to clean up, that eventually we have to go through our systematic and very routine just toy-slaying experience where you pick five things that are your favorite things, and you keep those. We're trashing everything else. Or the next time that we ask y'all to clean your room up, if whatever's left out on the floor is going in the trash or going to Goodwill or something. And we've had incredible success with that. We really have started a couple years ago trying to defeat that and just move away from the crap as much. And just, you know, fall back to making memories, fall back to making traditions, one or two simple gifts. We flirted with the idea of like something that you can play with, something that you can read, and something that you wear, something like that. You know, we've played with a lot of the myriad of different things. And but we've really kind of settled out to just, you know, one thing that just really fits who they are. And then in most cases, my kids come home with a bunch of toys from my family, because they love to dote on these kiddos as well. And so, you know, we're really trying to cut back. But personally, as a family, we want to start de-emphasizing how much we buy for them. We don't have a problem with buying things for them. We don't have a problem with people buying them things during Christmas. But we're really trying to take some of the emphasis out on that. The other reason for that is we want our kids to be hungry for things. We want our kids to be unsatiated. We live in a society where our kids are satiated for the most part, speaking in generalities. They get everything they want. They have everything that they want. And I don't mind that kids have the things that they want. But what happens is they're so satiated, they have no desire to get off their butt and go work. To realize that every single item, every single thing that they own is connected to a certain amount of man hours that typically mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or somebody had to do to earn to buy that thing that they have. And we want our kids to grow up knowing that if you want good things, you got to go buy them. If you want to go buy them, you got to have money. If you want to have money, you've got to work hard. It's a phrase that we say probably almost daily in this house. If you want to play hard, you have to work hard. Or we simplify it and say, you got to work hard to play hard. We say that every day. Literally, you got to work hard to play hard. It's said almost daily in this household. And if kids have everything that they want, there's no reason to work. There's no reason to do hard work. And we want our kids to connect that. So that's kind of our second reason for avoiding the commercialism piece of it, is that we don't want our kids walking into 2015 satiated and filled up with everything they ever wanted. We want them to have things that they aspire to, that they want to work towards, that they want to save money for. We want them to jones for things. You're going to have the Urban Dictionary that I'm not going to spend time describing that. But we want them to jones for things, just things deeply that they desire to have. Another thing for Gibson Christmas this year, up until this point, everything has been about going and being somewhere and being with someone and being a part of some Christmas and getting to the next place. It's always been about that. This year, it's not that we don't want to do that necessarily, but in our heart of hearts, I don't think either Corey or myself mind the traveling and all that stuff, because we're a good team. However, we've made the decision this year that we're not going to do quite as much traveling as we've done in the past. Most of that is because traveling sucks in a lot of ways when you have six kids and you have an infant and basically two toddlers is what you've got. My daughter Charlotte is two. My sweet tea is three. But I'm going to say we're probably about the intellectual development about 1.5, 2 years old because of the trauma she's been through. And so we have two toddlers. And then most of our upper kids are really pretty self-sustaining, self-sufficient, which we love. But when it comes to six kids, it's just a lot of work and it's a lot of stress and it wears on us. We really want our kids to experience, and ourselves as well, an element of de-stressing this year and not worried about going somewhere. You know, we did that with Thanksgiving. And instead of going to, you know, all the places for Thanksgiving like we planned, we really decided to kind of bug in this year and just do Thanksgiving at home. One of the best decisions we've ever made. It was so nice to be relaxed and to be chill and to not be worrying about where we're going to go or what piece of china was one of the kids going to break out of grandmother's closet type thing. It was just nice to not be in that state. And so we're going to do that. We're not going to be nearly as laid back as we were for Thanksgiving, but we're certainly not going to be nearly as uptight as we were last year during Christmas. So we're pretty excited about that this year. Looks like my parents are going to be coming down on Christmas Day to our house, which is just that's just wonderful. It was just so wonderful they were willing to come here. We are going to be going to where my family lives Christmas Eve to celebrate with my grandparents and them as well. I'm excited. My dad's got a new plane. Get to go up with my dad in a plane. Boom. Excited about that. I love flying. So we'll definitely keep your eyes open for some video footage of flying around with my pops. You'll definitely want to come check that out. Well, I don't want to keep this going on much longer. I want to cover one more thing today before we wrap it up. And I want to talk a little bit about Elf on a Shelf. And I've had a few people ask my opinions on what Elf on a Shelf, you know, what I think about that. I've had a few of you that have sent messages last year that were like, Trey, I mean, Why does Elf on the Shelf bother me? Yes, it irritates the crap out of me too. I do not like Elf on the Shelf. And I actually had to process this with my wife earlier today. And I was like, Corey, why is it that I do not like Elf on the Shelf? She nailed it. I hate Elf on the Shelf. Why do I hate Elf on the Shelf? I find Elf on the Shelf, and guys, if you use it, this is just one man's opinion. That doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It's just my opinion. I think Elf on a Shelf is just another way to attempt to creatively try to control kids' behaviors. If you do the right thing, then Mr. Creepy Frickin' Elf on a Shelf won't see you doing it wrong and make a report. I mean, that's all it is. It is the Christmas version of a freaking gargoyle. For those of you guys that don't know, they used to put gargoyles on the sides of buildings as a way to scare off or frighten off evil spirits. In a lot of ways, that's what it is. It's the gargoyle. It's always watching, and it's watching your kids to watch for all the good things. And you're supposed to hide it in new positions and whatnot all over the house to get your kids' attention and thinking he's real and that he's got the fast track back to the North Pole, you know, or whatever. In my opinion, that meets the qualification of a lie. You can say whatever you want to say about it. It's a lie. And it is specifically designed to coerce behavior out of our kids for fear of losing something that they want, which is good graces with Santa Claus. Guys, I may have missed some of the understanding of what Elf on a Shelf is. Don't email me. I'm not going to give a flying, flipping crap about what the real story behind it is. We were given one a few years ago. We cracked it open. I read about it and said, this is crap. This is absolute load of crap. And we never put it up. And this was long before even we were doing Family Podcast Network. I mean, it wasn't like this was based off of my new belief systems. I mean, before I even could fully articulate what I'm saying today, that was how I felt about that stinking thing. I don't like it. I don't like teaching my kids to obey for fear that a fake thing that is not real, that I am the one putting into all these different positions to make them think is real, which is a lie, is going to do anything that it can't do. I want my kids doing the right things because it's the right thing to do, not because they don't want to lose something that benefits them. Nothing of Elf on the Shelf comes from a right place for me. I understand it's cute. My favorite picture of Elf on the Shelf so far has been the one where Elf on the Shelf is all tied up, and there's Boba Fett the Bounty Hunter standing behind him like they caught him. And that's my favorite picture so far. Although the one where they made it look like Elf on the Shelf was taking big dookies into the cookies, which are really just Hershey Kisses. That is my second favorite one that's been blowing around on Facebook. I don't like that. I don't like what it is. I don't like what it stands for. I don't think it's the right thing to do for our family. I see it as every bit as inappropriate as Santa Claus. Actually, in some ways, I see it as more inappropriate. But you could argue the same thing about Santa Claus because he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. Well, no, he doesn't. He's a fictitious character that we've created to try to create good behavior from kids instead of teaching kids why they need to be good. And then acknowledging that sometimes they won't be when they're younger as they're learning, which is a horse load of crap to me. So all that to say, we reject it. I hate it. It bothers the crap out of me. We don't practice it. We got rid of our copy pretty quickly. I think we actually sold it for a pretty decent amount of money. But I would have given that thing away or gladly burned it in a lot of cases. I just don't like it. All right, well, guys, we're sitting at about 45 minutes here. I suppose we'll go ahead and wrap this up for today. And I just wanted to kind of give you guys a little bit of an insight as to what it looks like at Gibson Christmas. Why am I saying this today? Should you do the things that we do? No. Should you not practice Santa Claus if you do? No. Should you not practice Elf on the Shelf if you do? No. Should you do any of the stuff that we do? No. The purpose for today is to say that Christmas is not written for you. It is not written by your family that wants you to come and be somewhere. It's not written by Santa Claus. It's not written by the people who choose to market and sell their stuff. You are the one who gets to decide what Christmas is going to be for your family. Make it the right thing. Don't get too caught up in the buying. Don't get too caught up in the music. Don't get too caught up in the travel. Remember to be present with your kids this week. You know what your kids want more than anything? A good memory. They want good memories of you during Christmas. And we often put ourselves in compromising situations. Guys, again, I'm not saying not to do any of those things. Traveling to go see family is a wonderful thing, and I recommend it. But make sure that you are not doing it at the detriment of your child, of your kids, and their happiness as well. All right, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. You guys, don't forget, come join us. We're going to be back this, we should be back this Friday. I believe Jeff and I will be doing our next episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. We got a new logo, dadgummit. We want to use it. So we're going to be on to talk about another awesome show this Friday. Come join us. If nothing else, folks, I hope you guys have a great day and a great week. We'll see you all on Friday.